you know, the Dr. King's family said, we don't want you to release the video. But they said, no, for transparency, we got to release it, even though they're not releasing Jeffrey Epstein's files. And Malcolm X family is saying, we want you to be transparent. We want you to release the files, but they're not doing it. And I believe that unless there's some motive that they have, they are being very selective in who they want to release files, who they don't want to release files, Amy. I think a lot of it is deliberate and intentional, and none of it is good for our causes. If they want to be transparent, then they need to be consistent across the board. Release Malcolm X files, release the Epstein's file, release everybody's files. Because we know in Phoenix, according, they just kept files on every significant black person trying to discredit them. Release all the files, Trump administration, if you want to be transparent.
Ben Crump, I want to thank you so much for being with us, leading civil rights attorney in this country. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we turn now to the forced starvation unfolding in Gaza, where malnourished children are overwhelming the remaining hospitals. Today, the Al-Ahli Arab Hospital in Gaza City announced the death of Palestinian child Abdulkader Al-Fayoumi from malnutrition, the 115th starvation-related death since Israel reimposed a siege on Gaza in March. Israeli attacks across Gaza killed at least 62 Palestinians Thursday, 19 of them while trying to collect food from militarized aid sites run by the shadowy U.S.-Israeli-backed so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, or GHF. On Thursday, displaced Palestinian women in Rafah were directed by GHF to a women-only distribution section where they were attacked with tear gas and pepper spray. For more, we're going to Oxford in England, to Professor Nick Maynard, a consultant surgeon at Oxford University Hospitals, who just returned Wednesday after volunteering for 4 weeks at Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis, south of Gaza City. He's volunteered in Gaza several times. His recent piece for The Guardian is headlined, "I'm witnessing the deliberate starvation of Gaza's children. Why is the world letting it happen?" Welcome back to Democracy Now! You've said that on some days you would see multiple patients injured in the same body parts. For example, gunshot wounds to the groin. Can you explain what you're saying?
Yes, thank you very much for inviting me back. One of the big differences on this most recent spell in Gaza compared to previous trips during this war has been the huge number of gunshot wounds I've had to treat, and specifically gunshot wounds in young teenage boys who have been shot at the food distribution centres, the so-called Gazan Humanitarian Fund. The boys are aged from anything from 11 to 15, 16. They are going there to get food for their starving families. And the narrative, the stories I'm getting from their families, from some of the victims, and indeed from my Gazan healthcare colleagues who have been to these food distribution sites, is very much the same from all of them. They are going to get food. It is chaos. There is rioting there. And they are being shot by Israeli soldiers and by the quadcopter drones, which are all over Gaza at the moment. And even more disturbing from that, there is a very clear pattern that the emergency doctors in the ER have recognised, and indeed the surgeons like me have recognised, that there is a cluster of injuries to particular body parts on particular days. So, for example, one day most of them will be coming in with gunshot wounds to the head and neck. Another day there'll be gunshot wounds to the chest. Another day to the abdomen, and even 12 days ago, we had four young teenage boys, all of whom were admitted with gunshot wounds to the testicles. And the clustering, the pattern we're seeing is very striking. And it it would appear to us that there's almost like target practice, playing some sort of game that we're going to go for the head today, the abdomen tomorrow, the testicles the day after that. Truly, truly shocking.
In your piece, you describe a seven-month-old infant saying, quote, "The phrase skin and bones doesn't do justice." Describe what you're seeing.
Yeah, so I spent quite a bit of time in the pediatric unit. I'm an adult surgeon, but I was operating on children as well. And I had one 11-year-old girl who was on the pediatric intensive care unit who I was seeing several times a day. So I spent quite a bit of time on the pediatric unit. And I went to the neonatal unit and saw the most awful examples of malnutrition, the like of which I could not have imagined existed in this world. Little 7 months old who looked newborn babies at times. They were all grossly underweight. There was no nutrition to feed them. There was virtually no formula feed to feed these newborn babies or these infants. And indeed, there'd been no formula feed allowed into Israel, into Gaza, since the last ceasefire for several months. And some American doctors I know who I was working with tried to bring formula feed into Gaza, and all the cartons of formula feed were confiscated by the Israeli border guards, and very specifically confiscating the formula feed. Nothing else, just taking out every single carton of formula feed. So these small children, these newborns, these toddlers, these other children on intensive care were all starving. There was not enough feed to allow them to heal properly.
Dr. Maynard, you write, "Every day I watch patients deteriorate and die, not from their injuries, but because they're too malnourished to survive surgery." Can you describe this?
Yes, this was particularly in the, I mean, most of the patients I operate on were adults. They come in, most of them come in very malnourished anyway, and they come in with severe injuries, explosive injuries from bombs, with severe shrapnel damage to their abdomen or their chest, or gunshot wounds. And they're very serious injuries that require major surgery to deal with them. But they are injuries and surgery which, in normal circumstances, they would be expected to survive. But because they're so malnourished, their tissues don't heal. Their immune systems are suppressed. The internal repairs we carry out to the liver, the pancreas, the duodenum, and the stomach, the bowel, they don't heal properly. They often end up breaking down, causing terrible infections inside the body, and frequently these patients die. So the mortality rate from these injuries is much higher than one would otherwise expect. And there is no nutrition in the hospital to give the adults. There's no intravenous nutrition. There's virtually no liquid enteral nutrition to go into feeding tubes. They are totally reliant upon their families bringing in feed, and many of them are starving themselves, so can't get any feed to bring in to their relatives.
Professor Nick Maynard, we'll end with your headline, "Why is the world letting it happen?" You've come back to Britain. France has just said that they're going to recognize Palestine as a state, putting enormous pressure on Britain to do the same. What you feel needs to be done?
Well, to be honest, we need more than words. Our Prime Minister in the UK, our Foreign Secretary, have certainly come out with stronger words in recent weeks, but there have been no actions, and we need more than words. They are worthless without actions. We need as much aid and food to go in as possible. We need a ceasefire, and our government and the US government need to force the Israeli government to stop this.
Professor Nick Maynard, consulting surgeon at Oxford University Hospitals in Oxford. He returned Wednesday after volunteering for 4 weeks at Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis. We'll link to your piece on witnessing the deliberate starvation of Gaza's children. Why is the world letting it happen? When we come back, we go to the Mediterranean Sea. Another Freedom Flotilla aid boat has set sail. We'll speak with one of the members on board and with the only Palestinian an American member of Congress, Rashida Tlaib. Stay with us.
I see somebody. marching. They're marching down the street. Yeah. I see somebody marching. They're marching down the street. Oh, yes, they are.
Streets by Zeeshan B in our Democracy Now! Studio. To see the whole song as well as our interview with Zeeshan B, go to democracynow.org. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. A group of international activists from the Freedom Flotilla Coalition are sailing across the Mediterranean to Gaza to challenge Israel's blockade, illegal under international law. Over a month ago, a prior Freedom Flotilla boat, the Madeleine, was raided by Israeli forces and seized in international waters. The current mission is called Handala for the Children of Gaza. The mission comes as the starvation crisis in the besieged strip is rapidly worsening. According to Save the Children, nearly every child in Gaza, there are more than 1.1 million, is at risk of starvation. The Handala launched from the southern port city of Gallipoli in Italy 5 days ago. The Freedom Flotilla Coalition says the boats carrying life-saving humanitarian aid and, quote, a direct political message, the blockade must end, unquote. There are 19 crew members, 2 journalists on board. Among those sailing are Chris Smalls, founder of the Amazon Labor Union, and our next guest, Huwaida Araf, a Palestinian-American human rights attorney, steering committee member of the Freedom Flotilla. She's on board the boat. Huwaida, thank you for joining us again on Democracy Now! Talk about what you faced. You said that the boat was sabotaged twice, and what you're hoping to accomplish.
Thank you so much for having me, Amy. I recall talking to you in our first mission to try to break the siege in Gaza back in 2008. It's unfortunate that we are still sailing to do so because our governments have refused to act. The blockade was illegal in 2008. It is illegal and deadly and part of a genocide now. Yes, over the years that we've been sailing, Israel has repeatedly attempted to sabotage our vessels and our missions, and at times it has succeeded in delaying us, but not in stopping us. Before leaving Gallipoli on Sunday, we were subjected to 2 very serious incidents, which we are just asking for an investigation because they are very unusual, and they came on the heels of Israel announcing that it was exerting all efforts to prevent us from leaving port. The first of those was a rope that was tightly wound around the propeller of the ship. And while that sometimes happens, the way this rope was wound and attached to chains that sunk in the sea was quite unusual. The second was as we ordered a water truck so that we can fill the tanks of the ship, the water tanks, with water that we could use throughout the journey. It is 7-8 days before we reach from Gallipoli to Gaza. And instead of water, the truck brought sulfuric acid. And luckily, we had not connected the hose to the boat, but our crew had smelled something. And when they turned on the faucet, they were splashed and burned. That could have been catastrophic. So, you know, again, Israel announced that it was trying to stop us in various ways. It has sabotaged before. We suspect it was another attempted sabotage, but we are now focusing on just getting to Gaza. We got out of port safely. Everyone is safe, and we are focused on trying to get to Gaza.
And so can you talk about what your plans are at this moment? About how many hours are you from Gaza? And compare it to the Madeleine, the ship that attempted before. Among those on that ship was Greta Thunberg, when the Israeli forces raided the ship and took everyone off and ultimately deported them.
Yes, currently we are approximately 2 days from reaching Gaza. We are less than 24 hours from the point where Israel attacked the Madeleine and abducted everyone from international waters, taking them against their will to Israel. We, you know, over the years, Israel has tried various methods to stop us. It has been very violent, from attacking, beating, abducting, arresting, jailing, and even killing our volunteers in 2010. A flotilla that I know you also covered, and I was on, Israel killed 10 of our volunteers. But that did not stop us, and it's not going to stop us now. Yes, Israel attacked and abducted the activists aboard the Madleen. 1 month before that, they bombed one of our ships that was preparing to leave from the from Malta. It actually violated European airspace to attack a civilian humanitarian vessel. And right now, we know that this is very much a possibility. This is a scenario that we may be attacked by armed violent commando forces that will overtake our ship and abduct us all. We hope that's not the case. We've been putting out calls specifically as American citizens. A couple of days ago, we have 7 American citizens out of the 21 on this ship. We put out a call to President Trump, the U.S. government, the U.S. media to stop enabling Israel's genocide, stop participating in the genocide. This is not what the American people want, and we are sailing in accordance with international law. Even if it wasn't acting to uphold the rights of the Palestinian people in Gaza, even if the U.S. government was not interested in refraining from participating in a genocide, the U.S. government should care about protecting the rights of U.S. citizens. We are sailing. We are civilians. We are unarmed. We are carrying humanitarian aid, and we are sailing from international waters into Palestinian waters, which Israel has no right to control. An attack on us would be an attack on American citizens. We expect our politicians to speak up, but sadly, we know that the administration, the U.S. Congress, they are not listening to the American people. Poll after poll is showing that the American people do not support funding this genocide, and yet our government continues to vote to send more money to starve and maim and behead children. Of course, more than children and civilians, but the children are the most severely impacted from the bombing, the maiming, and from this deliberate starvation, from this engineered famine. The children, the infants, are the first to their bodies can't take it. And so this is why we have called our vessel, it's called the Handala, which is a 10-year-old Palestinian child, a cartoon of a 10-year-old Palestinian child, but also filled the boat with things for children, not only food, but baby formula and diapers and stuffed animals that were donated from children in Italy to children in Gaza, and a message of solidarity, love, and hope. Of course, it doesn't come close to meeting the needs, but our message is that the seeds of illegal blockade must be broken. It's not just about humanitarian aid. Yes, Palestinians in Gaza need humanitarian aid, but that is a deliberately created situation, humanitarian catastrophe that's been engineered. And we need to fight the policy. And the policy is right now that the entire world is allowing Israel, has allowed Israel to turn Gaza into an extermination camp. And they're standing by, letting Israel control what gets in and out of a people that they are actively annihilating. This is not something we accept.
Hueda Araf, we want to thank you so much for being with us, Palestinian-American human rights attorney, speaking to us on board the Gaza Freedom Flotilla. The ship is named Handala. We will continue to follow this. They are expected to arrive in Gaza sometime around Sunday if Israel allows them to land. We are also joined in Detroit by Congressmember Rashida Tlaib, the only Palestinian-American member of Congress. She addressed members of the flotilla, the Handala, earlier this week. What are you calling on the Trump administration to do to ensure the safety of this ship? You previously called for the safe passage of the ship before that Israel raided the Madleen, Congressmember.
Yeah, I mean, we use the power of the letterhead and getting a lot of my colleagues, so it's not just me alone, but other fellow Americans that don't share my faith or ethnicity or have a close connection to the movement for human rights for the Palestinians. But I can tell you, you know, many of my colleagues are expressing in words to me about the starvation, the forced starvation of the people in Gaza, the Palestinians there, but they're lacking action. Their votes don't meet up with the words of it needs to stop. They have the leverage. They can sign letters, send their own letters. And so for all those listening to, you know, Haweda, who's from Michigan, from my home state, you know, talking to Chris Smalls, Jacob, and so many, hearing their stories come out of why they're there, they are risking their lives and sacrificing so much to try to break the siege, to go there while they continue, as all of us continue to see the images of just children and so many others, even the parents, you know, just dwindling, their organs shutting down. Mothers, just like me and Haweda and so many others, expressing like, is it because my child is Palestinian? Is it because they're in Gaza? And it is really incredibly difficult. But the Trump administration knows more. A letter is coming, knowing that, again, all eyes on the Fotella. I'm asking everyone to keep your eyes on there. Pay attention, no matter what country, no matter what community you live in. You know, the majority of folks globally have been standing up and saying enough is enough. And the genocide and the forced starvation, you know, I've been, you know, awaken an understanding. Sometimes I wish my colleagues would maybe pretend that they weren't Palestinian and they would actually care and do something to end this madness of, again, allowing people that are just hungry to go to death traps that we, the American people, are paying for to lure them in because they're so hungry. And they know from hearing from other stories that they could lose their life trying to get food. And again, stories after stories, not only from the doctor we listened to and Haweda's previous experience of even trying to break the siege. This is not the first, nor will it be the last time that, again, the Israeli government violates international law. They consistently do it. They have for decades. And so we're going to continue again trying to elevate and make Congress move. And we can do that by having members, Americans from outside that institution, demand their member do what they're asking.
So I want to ask you about where you're from, your family from the West Bank. And I want to ask you about the killing of another U.S. citizen by Israeli forces, Israeli settlers in the occupied West Bank, fatally beat 20-year-old Palestinian-American from Tampa, Florida, earlier this month, Saifullah Mosalet, known as Saif by his family. He was visiting his village, Al-Masra al-Sharqiya, reportedly the seventh American killed in the West Bank, Gaza, Lebanon, since October 2023. A second Palestinian, Mohammed al-Shalabi, was shot dead during the settler attack. Mosalet's cousin, Diana, read a statement from the family.
We are devastated that our beloved Saifullah Mosalet, nicknamed Saif, was brutally beaten to death in our family's land by illegal Israeli settlers who were attempting to steal it. Israeli settlers surrounded Saif for over 3 hours as paramedics attempted to reach him, but the mob of settlers blocked the ambulance and paramedics from providing life-saving aid. After the mob of Israeli settlers cleared, hours later, Saif's younger brother rushed to carry him to the ambulance. Saif was killed and died before reaching the hospital.
And just this week, the Israeli Knesset, the parliament, voted 71-13 for a non-binding motion to annex the occupied West Bank. It calls the West Bank an inseparable part of the land of Israel. Can I get your response to what the U.S. government is doing about the killing of its citizen, Saif, and this latest news from the Knesset?
The American government is doing absolutely nothing, as per usual, around American citizen that has been killed. Military and others watch this happen, watch extremists. And, you know, again, these are Israelis, and people call them settlers. They're extremist Israelis. Nobody knows what these are. These are folks coming into, with their Israeli citizenship, coming in to take land. But it's, you know, I don't like when people call it a clash. They came for the intention of forcibly, with force, with violence, killing people. To take, again, property or to harass, and sometimes it's just to intentionally harass and target the Palestinian people, because the goal here is, and the Knesset told us, is to ethnically cleanse anyone who is Palestinian that is, again, different faiths. But if you're Palestinian, if you're Christian, if you're Muslim, you, again, are going to be pushed out of this, of the land, being pushed out again, all under this movement again to completely get rid of the Palestinian people from all corners of the country. And again, this is even Palestinian citizens of Israel are being targeted. I don't know if people realize there's integrated communities where now the Palestinian people there, again, that have Israeli citizenship are also being targeted. All this to say is I don't care if it's in Jerusalem, in the integrated neighborhood or community, or in the West Bank, you know, what happened to Saif, what happened to Muhammad, what happened, again, continues to happen to American people, is the experience of the Palestinian people there that are not American. It happens all the time. It is consistent. And one of the things that people need to know is that these are Israeli citizens, folks just walking around with the enabling and the support of the Israeli military and the genocidal maniac Netanyahu. They have set out the bastion, go for it, go ahead and ethnically cleanse. And then the Knesset just showed them with the vote, that's exactly what they want to do. And the American government and my colleagues, Democrat and Republican, sit by idly and say, that's terrible, or I don't like Netanyahu. Great, then stop sending him and the country our money. Use it as leverage to uphold human rights. Use it in a way, again, to uplift what we all believe in. No one should be forced to starve. No one should be pushed out of their land, again, illegally to violate international laws. All of those things to say is, you know, Amy, I watched in a committee people just distressed of an American being brutally killed in Syria and wanting to insist on sanctions, again, that hurt the people on the ground. But the fact that they were willing to do it there, but not when it comes to the Israeli government. There's always an exception when it comes to the Palestinian people. It is completely racialized. Again, I intentionally say in my speeches on the House floor, if you need to close your eyes and pretend they're not Palestinian, they're not brown, they're not Muslim, they're not Christian, all of these things. I wonder if my colleagues would act differently. I really do think they would. And again, many of my colleagues try to send letters, but even their letters there's racist tropes in those letters. There's words in those letters that even erase, again, the brutality of what happened to Saif and so many others. And, you know, I've been there 7 years and it's getting worse, not better, even as we watch the genocide live on social media platforms, even as we hear from Americans in our own backyard talk about their loved ones being targeted and brutally murdered. And again, Saif and Muhammad has exposed to us what happens to the Palestinian people who are not Americans every single day that they live there.
Mm. Finally, the Republicans in the Financial Services Committee voted to block an amendment from you, Congressmember Rashida Tlaib. This is on a different issue, which would have forced the release of Jeffrey Epstein's financial files, particularly details about his shady, suspicious financial transactions, the dead child sex trafficker. Recent reports reveal billions of dollars in payments to women, including those in Belarus and Russia. You also signed on to a House bipartisan measure introduced by Thomas Massey and Ro Khanna demanding the release of the files. In this last 30 seconds we have, why is this so critical to you? And this on the second day meeting of Trump's former personal lawyer, now the deputy attorney general, and Ghislaine Maxwell.
I think it's important to know there are three banks, very large banks, JP Mortgage Chase and Bank of America and another bank, Mellon in New York. All three of them did not, within the regulations and requirements, within 60 days of those transactions by Epstein, report those transactions. They're, again, require within 60 days. Amy, they waited until he was arrested in 2019. We're not talking about 100 or 200, over 4,000 transactions amounting to $1.5 billion. It is important and critical to understand who was involved directly in the human trafficking of young women.
3 seconds.
Who, again, enabled it.
Democratic Congressmember Rashida Tlaib, I want to thank you for being with us, of Michigan, the only Palestinian-American member of Congress. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are tuned in to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from Burnaby Mountain, B.C.
With Canada's health system under strain, going Digital can help heal our healthcare. From virtual visits for everyday concerns to faster, more accurate diagnostics powered by AI, technology is transforming care. Digital Health Canada supports the people and innovations behind this change. Learn more at digitalhealthcanada.com and subscribe to our podcast.